Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Seventh Son, Congregation of God, 12th Hour of Elgin, Texas. Today is September the 11th, 2024, or it is 69, 2028. We're on the eve of the Day of Atonement. And we're going to continue our services, praying for the Day of the Atonement. Tiny Greetings, Volume 1, number 10, Church of Address by the V.T. Hart of October the 12th, 1946. And we're going to start this service, number 2 service of the Day of the Day of Atonement, on the eve of the Day of Atonement. We're going to start with the prayer. What brings success unto the revival and reformation? It says in the last session, page 425, we read, I have been deeply impressed by the scenes that have recently passed before me in the night of season. There seemed to be a great movement, a work of the revival going forward in many places. Our people were moving into line, responding unto Yahweh's call. Brethren, Yahshua is speaking unto us. This is Ellen G. White talking. Here is a forecast of a great movement that is to carry on a work of a successful revival in many places. Here it is also seen that the people will respond unto Yahweh's call, and that this envisioned work of revival is to be carried by a divinely organized movement, not by the Seventh Heaven's denomination though, and not by a man here and a man there. For the movement is the Yahweh created, not devised by men. And we know that the fourth movement for Israel came to an end in 2003 at Kermit, Texas. Brother Johnson was the last prophet to the Adventist Church at Gilead Center, the third feeding pastor for Israel, our spiritual Israel of 2002. And took a whole year for that Adventist movement to come to a close with Brother Johnson at the helm as the ancient man before the house, and the judgment started with him, 1 Peter 4:17, to start at the house of Yahweh. And that's been 21 years ago that movement, the fourth movement, and we are in the fifth movement now. It's the tribe of Judah, the house of David, and Yahshua is at the head of this movement. And people will be moving into line as prophecy continues to fulfill. Well, we have 3 years seeing numerous persons and groups of the persons in the different parts of the Adventist world who at one time or another did stage what they termed as a revival and reformation, but not one of them had ever been able to accomplish much, if anything. one by one, they end up by quitting and disgust, rather than being revived and reformed for the better. They have to each such effort slid away from the Yahweh and closer unto the level of the world standards. True it must be unto every open-eyed truth seeker that the revival, which the life sketches predict and pictures, is this layman's movement. For aside from this movement that is now on foot, slowly but steadily sweeping away the rubbish throughout the adverse world, we have never as yet any existence of the author's writings and the life sketches seen another such an organized movement turn such a revival as this. For the Bible contains the complete plan of the salvation for all humanity. How do I know this? I know it because its story behind with the creation and ends with the earth made new. Between the first and the last pages of the Bible, then lies the complete formula for man's salvation and redemption. And if such a revival and reformation as here envisioned is to take place in the world, between those two events, creation and the new earth, then the materials and example of such a work must be found somewhere in the pages of the Bible. Before we read what the Bible has to say on the subject, I think we should first concretely define the words revival and reformation. For the word revival, the dictionary gives, means to restore, to refresh, or to renew, to reawaken, to reestablish. And for the Reformation, the dictionary gives this definition: to make a better morally, change for the better. For Yeshua, our righteousness, defines these terms of the speech as follows: a revival and a reformation must take place with the ministration of the Holy Spirit. For the revival and reformation are the two different things. Revival signifies the renewal of the spirit, life, of the spiritual life, with a quickening of the powers of the mind and heart by a resurrection from the spiritual death. Okay, it says, for the Reformation signifies a reorganization, a change in the ideas and theories, habits, and practices. For the Reformation will not bring forth the good fruit of the righteousness unless it is connected with the revival of the Spirit. For the revival and reformation are to do their appointed work. And in the doing this work, they must blend. Page 154, 1926 edition, page 121. What is the difference between the revival and reformation? for the revival meeting, for the bringing in of the spiritual quality back to life. Let's say it again. It says revival means to bring. Well, let's do this again. What is the difference between the word revival and the reformation? For the revival meaning to bring the spiritual qualities back to life, to quicken the mind and the heart to the uplifting of the spiritual phase of the life, to reestablish, to repair. And reformation means to change oneself for the better, to reorganize our moral powers with the divine guidance. In the Bible, there is but one example. It's a type of such a revival and reformation, as the one here predicted. We find it recorded in the books of the Haggai and Zechariah's prophecies. You remember that those ancient Jews were by Cyrus, king of the Persia, released from their captivity as soon as the Babylon fell. He made a decree that they should go back to their homeland to rebuild the desolation and the ruin. For the king especially decreed that the rebuilding of the temple and the reestablishing of the worship of the Yahweh of the heaven should be done faithfully and speedily. A revival of the spiritual part of the nation, the temple, and its system of the worship was their chief concern. But according unto Ezra 4:24, Cyrus' decree and also another that was issued a few years later were both frustrated, and in the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia, the work completely ceased, and apparently there was no hope of ever resuming again. Then it was that the prophets Haggai and Zechariah were called unto the prophetic office and commissioned to revive and to reorganize the builders for the deserted temple project. See Haggai 1:1 and Zechariah 1:1. For the happy and surprising result was that within 4 short years, the stately spiritual edifice was quickly finished, whereas all the previous and strenuous efforts of the kings and people covering a period of over 30 years completely failed. See Ezra 6:15. Let us now realistically consider why the builders' efforts and the king's decrees at first failed, and why at last they succeeded. Before Haggai and Zechariah were called to the prophetic office, many of the Jews returned from Babylon unto Jerusalem. Although the majority remained in Babylon, that is, the builders voluntarily went to build only because the captivity had ended and because the king had decreed that the temple of Yahweh should be built. But both the builders and the king's efforts were a complete failure. All came to naught. Then it was that through his prophets Haggai and Zechariah, Yahweh directed the work, and then it was that they quickly finished. In other words, not before the Yahshua took the reins in his own hand through the spirit of the prophecy did the work prosper. In fact, sacred history proves that nothing has ever prospered and Yahweh's work without the living spirit of the prophecy and its myth. Okay. For example, Moses understood from the childhood up that his lot it was to deliver the children of Israel from the Pharaoh's brickyard. And when he was fully grown up and thoroughly trained in the course of the Pharaoh and saw himself strong and capable, he quickly undertook to deliver the enslaved Hebrew host, killed one Egyptian, got into an argument with the Hebrew, then deserted everything, and without the hope of ever coming back, he fled the country in a complete defeat. 40 years later, after Yahweh endowed him with the spirit of prophecy, he returned 40 years later, after Yahweh endowed him with the spirit of prophecy, he returned and triumphantly led the Hebrew captives out of Egypt. Now, these special incidences make crystal clear that no matter how hard men may try to bring about revival and reformation among Yahweh's people, their efforts are doomed to failure even before they start, if Yahweh does not himself, through his prophets, take charge of the work. Now, as to what took place in the way of the Reformation after the ancient house of Yahweh had been built, let us read. Ezra 6:19-21. And the children of the captivity kept the Passover upon the 14th day of the first month. For the priests and the Levites were purified together. All of them were pure until the Passover for all of the children of the captivity and for their brethren, the priests, and for themselves and the children of Israel which were come again out of the captivity and all such as had separated themselves unto them from the filthiness of the heathen of the land to seek the Yahweh of Israel and did eat. Okay. Let us now connect Ezra's record with that of the Nehemiah. Nehemiah 10:28-32. And the rest of the people, the priests, the Levites, the porters, the singers, the Nethinim, and all they that had separated themselves from the people of the land unto the law of the Yahweh, their wives, their sons, and their daughters, every one having knowledge and having understanding, they clave to their brethren, their nobles, and entered into a curse and into an oath to walk in the Yahweh's law, which was given by the Moses, the servant of Yahweh, and to observe and to do all the commandments of the Yahweh, our Redeemer, our King, and his judgments and his statutes, and that we would not give our daughters unto the people of the land, nor take their daughters for our sons. And if the people of the land bring war or any victors on the Sabbath day to sell, that we would not buy it of them on the Sabbath, or on the holy day, and that we would leave the seventh year and the exaction of every dead. Also, we made ordinances for us to charge ourselves yearly with the third part of a shekel for the service of the house of our Yahweh. Here you see a record of the complete revival and reformation, such as had never been. For the things that were revived are these. Number one, the house of Yahweh was rebuilt. So, when we start this last and final revival today, it's going to be the house of David is the one that's going to do it. And the house of David had to be born from a revival. In 2002, 2003, from a tension. There was a revival there. Brought the whole fourth movement to a close of the Adventist Church. With Brother Johnson, Angel of the Seventh Candlestick, let us hear the prophecy of the Adventist Church. His prophecies and what he was teaching of the church, cratered, completely dissolved and came to an end. And all of those that stayed with his false teaching there in the end, they all died, they all perished with it. Okay. So it says that here we see a record of the complete revival reformation such as never been, the things that were revived to live. The house of Yahweh was rebuilt. So the Seventh-day Adventist Church has to be rebuilt. It has to be rebuilt worldwide. Okay. And the sacred services reinstituted. Okay. So, when were the sacred services taken away? They were taken away in 538 A.D., by the Catholic Church. The Pope trampled the truth of the sanctuary underfoot. It says so there in Daniel, chapter 7 and 8. Okay, so it says that the house of Yahweh has to be rebuilt and the sacred services reinstituted. Okay. Number two, the old ways were rebuilt and the city re-inhabited for the reforms which took place were, number one, the priests and the Levites were all purified. Number two, all the children of the captivity separated themselves from the filthiness of the heathen. Okay. Number three, all entered into a curse and into an oath to walk in the Yahweh's law, to observe the judgments and his statutes, not to give their daughters to the people of the land, nor to take their daughters for their wives, for their sons. And number four, they made Sabbath observant a strict rule. And number five, they liberally pledged to support the work of the Yahweh with their means, with their money. Such genuine and complete revival and reformation had never been launched since men fell into sin, that the revival and reformation of that day is a type of the revival and reformation to take place in our day. is principally noted from the fact that the prophecies of both the Haggai and Zechariah intermingle dual events, one to take place in their day and another to take place in our day, says Yeshua. Haggai 2:21-23. Speak unto Zerubbabel, governor of the Judah, saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth, and I will overthrow the throne of their kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen, and I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses, and their riders shall come down every one by the sword of his brother. And that day saith Yeshua of the host, son of Yahweh the Father, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith Yeshua, and will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith Yeshua of the host. That stands for today's living prophet that understands the present tense of this prophecy, and this is where this prophecy belongs, and the one that receives it, this prophecy in the last days, is the antithetical Zerubbabel. Now I sit in that seat right now receiving this prophecy. Here we are told that in the day that Yahweh destroys the strength of the heathen kingdom, which event is yet future, he makes the ancient Zerubbabel a signet of a Zerubbabel in the day that the strength of the kingdom is destroyed again, we read. So there is an antithetical Zerubbabel in these days that's going to fulfill this type. Zechariah 2:5-11-13. For I saith Yahshua will be unto her as a wall of fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her, and many nations shall be joined unto the Yahshua in that day, and shall be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, and thou shalt know that the Yahshua of the host has sent me unto thee. Be silent, O all flesh, before the Yahshua, for he is raised up out of his holy habitation. For the wall which the Jews built around Jerusalem and the Zechariah there was of the stone, but the one here predicted to be of fire, far superior, rendering absolute security unto the inhabitants that are within. Moreover, no other people, none besides the Jews, were permitted to join the builders of Jerusalem in his day. But in our day, many nations are to join. Furthermore, at the fulfillment of these prophecies, Yahshua requests that all flesh reverently and silently note that he is raised up out of his holy habitation, that he is now visiting the earth. Zechariah 2:8. For this saith the Yahshua the host, after the glory, that is after the advent, after the church eternal, hath he sent me unto the nation, which spell or spoil you, for he that touches you touches the apple of his eye. In Zechariah's day, Yahshua did not send anyone unto the nation after anything, but in our day he is a sin antitypical Zechariah. That's the interpreter of the Zechariah's prophecy unto the nations that are ruling and exploiting his people, and those nations are to become a spoil and shall know that the Yeshua has sent him. It's antitypical Zechariah. Now this will be none other but the antitypical Elijah David. That's who this will be. Zechariah 2:12. And Yeshua shall inherit Judah, his portion in the Holy Land, and shall choose Jerusalem again. When the nations join the Yahshua in the Holy Land, then it is that he shall inherit Judah and again choose Jerusalem. So, that's going to happen again. And most significant of all, he declares that he has already raised up out of his holy habitation to accomplish all these things. Zechariah 8:7, 20:21. This says, Yahshua, behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country. This says, Yahshua, behold, it shall yet come to pass that there shall come people, and the inhabitants of many cities, and the inhabitants of one city shall go to another, saying, let us go speedily to pray before the Yahshua, and to seek the Yahshua the host. I will go also. All right. So it says, for the prophet's attention was directed unto a time when the Yahshua is to gather his people from both the east and the west, to a time when one of the city's inhabitants will invite another to go to the Holy Land. This same prophecy appears in both Isaiah chapter 2 and Marcus chapter 4. Zechariah 8:22-23. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come to seek the Yahshua of the host in Jerusalem, and to pray before the Yahshua. Thus saith the Yahshua of the host, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold out of all languages of the nation, even take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, is with you. Obviously, the 10 men are a representative figure of the universality, as are the 10 virgins of the Matthew 25. If so, then the purified church of the body will speak all the languages of the nations. So that would be the house of David. This is that purified with the 144,000, first priest out of the Adventist church. The 144,000 first priest of the Adventist was produced at the end of the fourth movement, and they do their work closing out the judgment of the dead, and they do their work in the fifth movement in the judgment of the living. Now, they're taking hold of the one that is a Jew and saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that Yahweh is with you. Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, is with you. Definitely points out that someone, a descendant of the Christian Jews, meaning the descendant of the 12 disciples and their converts, will proclaim Yahweh's ingathering message in the time of the end, and that he will be recognized as such. Let us now turn to Zechariah 9:9, rejoice greatly, O daughter of the Zion, and shout, O daughter of the Jerusalem, behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation lowly, and riding upon an ass, and upon a colt, the foal of an ass. In these prophecies is brought to you the first advent of Yahshua, Zechariah 9:10. And I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim, and the horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall speak peace unto the heathen, and his dominion shall be from sea even to sea, and from the river even unto the ends of the earth. That is, Yahweh was to build the ancient kingdom, Ephraim and Jerusalem, Israel and Judah. Let's do it again. That is, Yahshua, the host, the son of Yahweh, was to bring the ancient kingdoms, Ephraim and Jerusalem, Israel and Judah, to an end, and then turn unto the Gentiles and speak salvation unto them. Thus shall his dominion be over all the earth. So Yahshua's dominion is going to be over all the earth. Zechariah 12:3-9. And in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves of it shall be cut in pieces. So all the people of the earth together against it. In that day shall Yahshua defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as a David, and the house of David shall be as Yahweh, as the angel of Yahshua before them, and it shall come to pass in that day that I will cease to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. That is, after this disintegration, let's do it again. That is, after the disintegrating of the ancient kingdom, Israel and Judah, he is again to reestablish and unify them as depicted in Ezekiel 36 and in other portions of the scriptures. At that time, Jerusalem, the city of the saints, is to become a burdensome stone for all the people of the earth. That is, they will hate the city and its inhabitants and will attempt to take it, but instead they will be cut in pieces, for the Yahshua will defend his people. Then it is that even the most feeble among the inhabitants of Jerusalem shall be as willing, as daring, and as capable as was the ancient David, and the house of the David as the kingdom that is to be set up, which is but the Seventh-day Adventist Church, producing the 144,000 purified saints that purifies the kingdom of David. No sinners among them, Isaiah 52:1, shall be as the angel of the Yahshua before the people. Since the Zerubbabel or Zechariah's prophecy meant only partial fulfillment in the days that the Jews returned from the Babylon unto Jerusalem, and since his writings speak interchangeably of another such movement, there which is to be greater than the former movement, there is therefore no doubt but that the latter and the antitype of the former, hence the revival and reformation of the Zechariah's time, is to repeat in our time. For the builder's failure to continue with the work and to bring revival and reformation before the Haggai and Zechariah carried to the prophetic office, and their success after the Yahweh through the prophets took over perfectly demonstrates that without the living spirit of prophecy and the mist, the revival and reformation efforts tend to cease. And that is why. Let's do that again. It says, and their success after Yahweh through the prophets took over perfectly demonstrates that without the living spirit of the prophecy in the midst, no revival and reformation efforts can succeed. And that is why they all heretofore have failed. For the type also perfectly demonstrates that since Yahweh has now risen from, that the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, has now risen from his holy habitation and has taken the reins in his own hand, revival and reformation is sure to triumph. It is therefore useless to agitate revival and reformation while one knows not what and how actually to revive or to reform. It is commendable to hold up the standard, but it certainly is not in the Yahweh's order for one to woke or to work up as something and to call it revival and reformation. In the conclusion, let us summarize the two main points which our study of the afternoon has definitely made clear unto us. Number one, a work and a movement similar to those of Zechariah's day to successfully to bring revival and reformation among the Yahweh's people of today, that those who expect the promised blessing must wholeheartedly enter into it. Number two, that without the living spirit of the prophecy in our midst, there can be no success in any revival and reformation, and that the sooner we know it, the quicker we shall achieve our goal. Well, this brings us to the end of number 10, One Time Ingredients Volume. And we have about 17 minutes left for our hour, and we need to fill it in, make use of this hour. And so we'll back up then, and we'll go to One Time Ingredients, number 9, and see what we got there. What brings us? Oh no. Number 9. Okay. The angel of the Yahweh. It says, the house of David as the angel of the Yahweh. What brings us to okay. So the house of David as the angel of the Yahweh. It says, One Time Ingredients, number 9, opening prayer thought. We'll just go on to our main title, The House of David as the Angel of the Yahweh. This is October the 5th, 1946, the 8th Yahalot. We shall turn to Zechariah, the 12th chapter. The text of our subject is found in the 8th verse, but in order to find the time and the people in which the verse directly speaks, we must begin our study with the first verse of the chapter, Zechariah 12:1. For the burden of the word of the Yahshua for Israel, saith the Yahshua which stretches forth the heavens and... Let's do it again, Zechariah 12:1. For the burden of the word of the Yahweh for Israel, saith the Yahweh, that hath stretched forth the heaven, and layeth the foundation of the earth, and formeth the spirit of man within him. There are two points in this verse that we must seriously consider. Number one, that the burden is, well, actually, it's the Yahshua's burden, the Son of Yahweh. And number two, that his burden is for Israel, the church, not for the world. Okay. So this would be the antithetical church, would be the Seventh-day Adventist church. Paragraph 12, too. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of the famine unto all of the people round about. And they shall be in the siege both against Judah, that's the lawgiver, the house of David, and typical David's kingdom, fulfilling the prophecy of Daniel 2:44 and 45, and with Yahshua as a shadow that sits upon the throne of David here in these last days, and conducts the endgiving of all the saints from all over the world, first and second priest, and against Jerusalem. Okay. So it says, from this verse, we learn that the Gentile nations are to make a siege not only against Jerusalem, but against Judah also. Yes, against the entire kingdom, the house of Israel, church, our people, and at that time, at the time of the siege, Jerusalem will be made a cup of trembling. This siege is going on right now. Unto all people, that is, all the people shall fear Jerusalem and tremble before her. Zechariah 12:3. And in that day will I make Jerusalem a burden to stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, till all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. For this siege shall not be made only by the nations adjacent to Jerusalem, but by all the people of the earth, as saying that it is made possible only by the communication lines in our day. Thus will Jerusalem be a burdensome stone unto all the people round about, and an endeavor for the combating of the fear. They burden themselves by besieging the city of Jerusalem in the land of Israel. For this evil work, they shall be cut in pieces. Zechariah 12:4. In that day, saith Yahshua, I will smite every horse with astonishment, and his rider with madness, and I will open mine eyes upon the house of Judah, and will smite every horse of the people with blindness. So the Yahshua shall smite with the madness, with astonishment, and with blindness those who besiege the city, yet he shall open their eyes, his eyes, upon the house of Judah, the lawgiver. Genesis 49:10 is a prophecy for that. So the scepter shall not depart from Judah, that's the house of David, nor a lawgiver from between his feet. Okay, so the law is Yahshua, the lawgiver is Shiloh, until Shiloh comes, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. So Shiloh is the one that's between the feet of this angelical David. He's a judge sitting upon the throne of David. Okay. It says in Zechariah 12:5, and the governors of Judah shall say in their heart, the inhabitants of Yerushalayim shall be my strength, and the Yahshua of the host, the Yahweh. As the sinners are taken out from, and the governors of Judah, the lawgiver, 144,000, the governors of Judah, shall say in their heart, the inhabitants of Jerusalem shall be my strength, and the Yahshua of the host, the son of his father Yahweh. After the sinners are taken out from her midst by the judgment work for the living, then will the governors of Judah realize that their strength depends upon the sanctity inhabitants of Jerusalem and upon the Yahshua, their king, then it is that they will indeed be strong. Let us see what the next verse says about this. Zechariah 12:6. In that day will I make the servants of Judah like a hearth of fire among the wood, and like a torch of fire in the sheep, and they shall devour all the people round about, on the right hand and on the left. And Jerusalem shall be inhabited again in her own place, even in Jerusalem. In the matters not what we think. It matters not what we think, for the Yahweh is to have a strong, faithful people. The very kind here described, and Jerusalem is to be inhabited by the holy people, not a sinner among them. Since the antitypical prophet Elijah, that's the one that's speaking to you right now, that's interpreting these latter day prophecies, that's who truly has that title given to him, because he is interpreting the latter day prophecy, who appears just before the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua comes. Just before the judgment day for the living, finds the church overrun by the devil and badly as was the Jewish church in Yahshua's day. And as the saints, the first fruits are to be rescued one by one, he at first sends the fishes to fish them out, and afterward hunters to hunt them out. Jeremiah 16. Thus he gathers them one by one, Isaiah 27:12-13. And so it is today. They are fished by this free literature, and are now hunted by men right unto their houses, be they in the city, village, or countryside. Zechariah 12:7. It says that for the Yahshua also shall save the tents of Judah first, that the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem do not magnify themselves against Judah. He shall save the tents from the humble dwelling. Let's say again, he shall save the tents, the humble dwelling, rather than the houses or palaces of Judah, the lawgiver people first. That is, the Yahshua is to save first the common people, the laity, so that the ministry may not exalt themselves above the laity, that all may learn to give glory unto the Father Yahweh, not unto any man. Since nothing such as these verses of the scriptures predict has ever taken place in Jerusalem or in any other part of the world, obviously these predictions are yet to meet their fulfillment, and now we are to find out that they are to be fulfilled in our time or later on. Since the work we are now doing is not sponsored by any man, and since Yahweh has led us all the way, as definitely as He led the Exodus movement, making our way inch by inch, as Providence directs, and also since we are as the only people who have the message of the reestablishment of the house of David and of the restoring all things, Mark 9:12, and are therefore named the Davidians. There is no escaping of the conclusion but that the time for the fulfillment of these prophecies is very close at hand, even at the door, for the reason for which the announcement of these events is now being trumpeted throughout the Advent world, plainly then whatever Yahshua has to say in this chapter is for our learning and for our own special and present need. It is a communication especially addressed unto us and unsealed at this particular time, so that we may know what Yahweh would have us do and how to do it so that quickly all things be restored. But this is was a present tense message in 1946 by V.G. Holland. How much more is it today, 70 years later? We are now to read the text of our study, Zechariah 12:8. In that day shall the Yahshua defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is people among them at that day shall be as the David, and the house of the David shall be as the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yahshua before them. Besides giving us the assurance that the Yahshua shall defend his people, inspiration likens them unto the David and unto the Father Yahweh. Even the feeble one shall be as the David, and the house of the David shall be as the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yahshua before them. What a great and wonderful statement. What a privilege to be likened unto the Yahweh himself. Now, in order for one to know what it means to be as a David, one must know what kind of person ancient David was. To begin with, he was a first-rate shepherd. He risked his own life for the sheep. You remember that in order to save the lamb, he courageously went after the lion and the bear and killed them with his bare hands. And to save his nation's independence and Yahweh's great honor, on another occasion, he again risked his life by the bravely facing the giant Goliath. Because of the David's faithfulness, Yahweh delivered him from the beast and from the giant and made him king over his people. For the faithfulness of a person in the little things indicates his faithfulness in the greater things also. Faithfulness always brings promotion. So in order to be as a David, one must be as faithful, as dependable, and as zealous for the Yahweh's kingdom as was David of old. As was the David of old. Now that we might know what it means to be as a Yahweh, we must study what Yahweh is like. Okay. Actually, this is talking about be as a Yahshua. Now that we might know what it means to be as a Yahshua, and we must study what Yahshua is like. At the outset, he did not only create and abundantly fill the earth with every good thing. Well, let's go ahead and back up and redo this again. Now that we might know what it means to be as the Yahweh, we must study what Yahweh is like. At the outset, He did not only create and abundantly fill the earth with every good thing for His creatures, but He also planted a garden, a home for the man. Thus He made a modest home for all human beings who were to live thereafter. He taught Adam how to keep the home and how to dress the garden. He taught him to speak and to discern the nature between the one beast and another, to name them accordingly. Yahweh endowed man with the knowledge and life in order to make him happy and useful in the making the world what it ought to be. Even after the holy pair fell in sin, Yahweh was still interested in them as He was before. So much so, in fact, that He immediately began to teach them how to redeem themselves to return unto their eternal home. From that day to this, He thus continued to teach the human family. To do this saving work, Yahweh sent down the Spirit of the truth by His Son, Yeshua. He sent prophets and angels, also His only Son, all teachers of the redemption. He Himself descended upon the Mount Sinai in Saudi Arabia in about 1500 B.C. with the children of Israel and Moses coming out of Egypt, and Yahshua in that cloud with him. And even though they slew nearly all their servants, including their son, yet His unfailing interest in the human race was continued on unto this very day. Notwithstanding our cause, His promise to take us back into Eden, there to live with Him if we repent and stand as sure as does the sun. Now you see what Yahweh is like, and if we are to be as a Yahweh, then that is what we too must be like. For that means that we must be as interested in one another and in the upbuilding of His kingdom as He is interested. We are to be as unselfish as He is. We must gladly teach others all that He has taught us. We are to do all we can to improve the living conditions of the others. We are to make the world better than it could be if we were not in it. For the creation of weak, Yahweh did His part. Now we are to do our part of the creation if we are to be as the Yahweh. Whatever good thing we may have, be it trade or some other gift that is worth having, we are to be as faithful in it and as anxious to teach it unto others as He is faithful and anxious to teach us. If we neglect this duty, we shall not only fail to be as the Yahweh, but shall even be required to give account of our neglect. All through my life I have found people very selfish and fearful that someone would get ahead of them in one way or another. This brings the end of our study. Our contact is at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive.